I thought I'd talk about confidence tonight. Confidence. There's so much you can take as teaching from the life of the Buddha. This is just one very small incident, but it really does highlight what I wanted to talk about tonight. After his enlightenment, sitting beneath the Bodhi tree, he realized that he wanted to teach, and he realized that people most likely to pick up quickly his teaching were the five recluses that stayed with him when he was doing his austerities, who, when he ceased to do his austerities, rejected him. But such was the measure of the man that he wasn't really concerned about that. He knew that they would be able to get the teaching quickly, and so he left to walk to Benares, modern-day Varanasi, in India, in order to find them and teach them. And he came across this chap. He was walking along, and he came across this chap, and this chap noticed him and noticed that Gotama was very calm. He was clearly very bright and happy and content, and this chap asked him whose teaching he followed. And the Buddha replied that he didn't follow anyone's teaching. He indeed was the Buddha, and it was his intention to teach the world. I'm paraphrasing, but it was essentially that. And the chap replied something along the lines of, well, may it be so, and walked off in the opposite direction. I think the modern equivalent of that would be, whatever. Was the Buddha, was Gotama distracted by that? Was he upset by that? Was he concerned by that rejection? He wasn't concerned by the rejection at all. Of course not. He was the Buddha. He had perfect confidence in what he was doing, because it came from his direct experience. He understood, and he was going to teach other people the way. And that's the point I wanted to make, that for the Buddha, there was what we might call low investment and high vulnerability. I would like to claim these ideas as my own. They're not, I found them in a book, but they're brilliant, so I'm going to use them. The idea being that he had a low investment in what other people thought of him, a low emotional investment. It didn't matter what other people thought of him. Why? Because he had high vulnerability, meaning that he was absolutely true to himself. He had absolute confidence in himself and in what his life was and what he was doing. So he had a detachment, an independence from what other people thought of him. When you have that kind of confidence, you don't need other people's approval. You are not concerned as to whether somebody else will reject you or accept you. The consequence of that is that you emit, is that the right word? You give off? No, that sounds even worse. There is this sense of confidence, of integrity, of truthfulness, which is extraordinarily attractive. The purpose of the Buddha's teaching is to bring everyone to the fulfillment of that confidence. Freedom from suffering, could be described as unselfconscious, spontaneous being. So it's the ability for someone to, ironically, given non-self and all that, to truly be themselves in a completely spontaneous way, because they have low investment in what other people think of them, because they are not dependent upon what other people think of them for their happiness. And they are absolutely true to themselves, true to the principles of their life. So, to give you a switch round, let's look at it from another perspective. A typical 17, 18 year old boy who wants a girlfriend. Now, in a lot of cases, rather than being high in vulnerability and low in investment, that young man will be high in investment and low in vulnerability. What do I mean by that? He will be very unsure of himself. He wants the relationship in order to fulfill himself, to have this idea of himself as whole, as being complete. So he invests emotionally a lot in having a girlfriend. So if he finds a girl who seems attractive and attracted to him, he will invest tremendously in her approval. And that brings with it an intense fear of rejection. So he will not have faith in his own integrity as a human being, because he's unsure of himself. What he will do, because he's got high investment in the girl, and he doesn't want to be rejected, he will try to manipulate himself to appeal to the girl, what he believes she would find attractive. So he's no longer true to himself. He's trying to be something he's not. It's the absolute reverse. And is that attractive? No. It's not attractive at all, because he comes across as anxious and fearful. I see quite a few smiling faces from the women amongst us, and I think probably you have some experience with this. It's not very attractive. And telling her repeatedly how beautiful she is, it's nice at once, I guess, but it begins to just become irritating, and because he's not being true to himself. He's trying to be something that he's not. Okay. So he's got low confidence, low esteem, and as a consequence, he gets rejected. The very thing that he didn't want. Okay. So this is a dance that's been going on forever, of course. What has he got to do? What's the boy got to do? He's got to do the switcheroo, isn't he? He's got to become high in vulnerability and low in investment. And how does he do that? Well, I think it was Winston Churchill who said, if you want to succeed at something, double the rate of failure. He's got to get life experience. He's got to be told, or he's got to work out, that investing so heavily in other people for your own sense of well-being is never going to work. It's just going to create suffering. So he learns to relax, to let go of such a high demand on other people for approval, and he learns to be himself. He learns high vulnerability, to have integrity for who he is, warts and all, recognizing that people are often attracted to the rough edges as much as they are to the beautiful bits, to have confidence in who he is, and that he is fine as he is, and that it's a really good idea to fail. It's a really good idea to be rejected many times, many, many times. Why? Because it's a question of compatibility. If he's using what we call false confidence, if he's putting on airs and graces and being something he's not, then in a very short space of time, that woman's going to work him out, isn't she? And he's still going to get rejected. So it's a very short-term measure. But if he's truly himself, and he is accepted, that's what you want. And maybe it is a case of it's a numbers game, perhaps. Just, you know, being willing to be vulnerable, being willing to be truly yourself, and having a low investment in the response. There's nothing wrong with being rejected. It's a painful feeling. But you're not being rejected as a human being, are you? It's just, it's not compatible at this moment. That relationship wouldn't be compatible. So it's just, it's natural, it's normal, it's right, it's not wrong. Okay, how does this relate to Buddhism and path and so forth? Oh, actually, before I go on to that, I've got a few other examples. Public speaking? That's classic, isn't it? I know all about that one. What was it? There was one talk I gave here, and I know, you know, everyone's on the same side here. It's not like doing Hyde Park Corner or anything like that. But one time I had a complete brain fade standing here, and it felt like eternity before a thought popped into my head, but it was probably only about a minute. And sometime later somebody said, "I really enjoyed your talk the other night." And I said, "Well, what about..." I had that complete brain fade. And she said, "Oh, I thought that was the best bit." You can't control what other... You can't control how... How can you possibly control how other people perceive you? That's a total manipulation, isn't it? Gross manipulation. So you find a confidence through a low investment. You guys can think what you like. What can I do? And then what you gain back is higher vulnerability, which is the freedom to truly be yourself. Okay? So you find this great confidence. Same with going for a job interview. I don't know where it came from, but the realization that if they didn't offer me the job, I didn't want it. But it wasn't right for me. And I completely relaxed when I went into job interviews, because I realised that if they didn't offer it me, I didn't want it anyway. And so I got offered the job. Because I came across as confident. So, like, with and the interesting thing is, like, with any new task that you start, of course there's going to be doubts. You're going to be hindered by self-concern, and how do I do this, and how do I do that? And what eventually happens is that you become accomplished in the routine, in the process, becomes second nature, and you would say, I am confident in doing that job now. But what it is, confidence something that you make? I put it to you that it isn't. When people say, "Oh, my confidence has been shattered," no, that's not the way it works. Confidence is our natural state. Our natural state is one of confidence. But what comes in and disrupts everything is self-concern. It is when, with the arising of self-consciousness in relation to whatever it is, that we lose confidence, because that sense of separation emerges and becomes strong, and perceptually we see ourselves as very separated from the world. Yeah? So confidence is actually what we have naturally, and it is the self-concern in all its various manifestations which is actually the problem. So the spiritual journey is, you could say, is a journey to true confidence. And to repeat, that is that unself-conscious, spontaneous being. And we all know what it is, because we all do it. Not all the time, not everyone all the time, obviously. But there are times when there is no self-consciousness. There is just spontaneous being. It could be something as simple as being absorbed in a movie. But at that time, there is no self-reference. There is just being, all the activities involved in sitting down and watching a movie. So, and the way the spiritual journey works is that it's on the one hand reducing that selfish investment in life. Because if you think about it, it's always a selfish investment in life if you're asking life to fulfill your wishes. It's for you. It's not for the... If it's a relationship thing, it's not for the woman's sake necessarily that the man wants her to like him. It's for his sake. It is fundamentally selfish. So that emotional investment is selfish in nature. So the spiritual path is about letting go of that, lessening that investment, and becoming more confident or recognizing our natural confidence, raising that vulnerability, allowing that vulnerability to become greater and greater. Because remember, that vulnerability is being true to ourselves as we really are, warts and all. Recognizing that the way we are is fine, because the world, life, is fine as it is. So how does the training work? Okay, here's an interesting thing. When somebody comes along for an initial interview, the centre behaves in exactly the same way. High vulnerability and low investment. Because what we say is, there are these parameters, and we want you to fulfil those parameters for 6 weeks. If you're serious about coming along. Once you're through the 6 weeks, they'll still get more parameters for every student who comes along. Talk about high vulnerability and low investment, because the likelihood is someone's going to say, "Whew, that's a bit heavy, isn't it? I'm not sure I want to do that." And you're rejected. Although, thankfully, there are a few of you here, so I guess not everyone runs away. Because what it does, it polarizes instantaneously, and it asks a question. Do you want this or don't? So, an individual who says, yes, I want it, is taking a leap of faith. They're showing some trust in life. After all, initially it's only for 6 weeks, so you get a good trial, and you find out whether it's what you're looking for. But the centre maintains this high vulnerability, which is its confidence in the Buddha's teaching, its confidence in the training that it works, its confidence that anyone applying themselves in the right way will get get genuine rewards in terms of lessening of suffering. So we feel, especially given that the centre runs on a donational basis, everything is offered free of charge, it gives us a free hand. It's so clever, it works so brilliantly well, because then it puts the emphasis on the student to say, yes, I am choosing it, and going over the threshold of their own volition, saying, yes, I choose it. Another aspect of this that becomes clear very early on is the relationship with the teacher. And this is very interesting, because it does replicate this same issue. On the one hand, you have the student who is high investment with the teacher and low vulnerability, which means that rather than seeing it as a collaboration between the teacher and student to help the student to realize the cessation of suffering, they come in with an attitude of, I have to gain the teacher's approval. I cannot be rejected by the teacher. So there is a large emotional investment in that relationship that the teacher just doesn't want, isn't interested in. And that affects things, because then there is this false confidence that emerges, where the student feels that they have to present to the teacher the image of what they believe is a good meditator. Yeah? So it's a lack of confidence, low self-esteem, feeling that I can't just be myself, I just can't tell the teacher exactly what's going on, because I fear that the teacher will reject me. Yeah? There's a high emotional investment in the teacher. And unfortunately, what's the teacher going to do? It's going to reject it. It's not rejecting the student, that's the thing. And that's the thing that the student doesn't realise. It's not a rejection of the student, it's a rejection of the false projection that the student is coming up with. So the student will come in and start talking about the five aggregates and the condition-dependent origination, and they think, I think you're a bit ahead of yourself. You somehow have to bring that person back down to a more realistic assessment, which may very well be perceived as a rejection. there's no real rejection there. It's only in the mind of the student that there's a problem with acceptance and rejection. The teacher's just there ready to collaborate and help. So the student needs to turn that around. Become high for vulnerability and low investment. To let go of this idea that the teacher gives a noggin, frankly, whether or not you're there. You chose it. You said you wanted it. Yeah? And get into more of this high vulnerability thing, which is accepting yourself as you are. And talking to the teacher about what's really going on. That seems critical to me, given that the fulfillment of this training is a realization that you and life is perfect as it is. So for me, personally, when a student who has been coming in and saying, oh yeah, I saw these lovely angels and lights and, oh yeah, okay, stops doing that and comes in and says, well, actually I'm feeling really irritable today. I go, yes. I'm so pleased. I know it's very paradoxical, but truly, because they've just told me the truth. They've shown integrity about themselves. They've shown confidence about who they are, about what's really going on. And the irony is, of course, they're not rejected. The fear is I'm not being a good Buddhist if I do irritation. A good Buddhist is somebody who does irritation and knows they're doing irritation. And the teacher will compliment them. God, I'm so pleased. Very paradoxical, this training, it really is. So how do you develop that confidence to be able to open up and truly be yourself? Impeccable living is, I think, the cornerstone of this. The willingness to live by the five Buddhist precepts. The willingness to develop parami. If you know that your conduct is irreproachable, with the occasional lapse, because we're human, but generally speaking, you look back over a period of time and you can really say, well, I haven't killed or harmed anything, I've been good in my speech, I've come down to the centre and I've given service and I've helped out. Then what that does is give you a tremendous, it gives you a genuine sense of a healthy ego, of being a, in inverted commas, good person, of living a blameless life. And that is a huge part of high vulnerability, is to know that your external behaviour can't really be questioned by anyone. Again, with lapses, because we're human. Because it all goes wrong, and if you're putting on this, I never do anything wrong act, then, you know, that's still low confidence, high investment, isn't it? Yes, so impeccable living is a really important aspect. It may polarise some people in the sense of you had your old ways and therefore you had your old sort of set of friends who did things in a certain way and you've begun to change. And that can be quite polarising. But again, with reflection, you can make a comparison and say, well, which is better, the approval of my old friends or the rejection of my old friends with this new pattern, this new paradigm? And I think pretty much everyone in the end chooses the rejection of their old friends because they feel so much better about themselves. They have a greater sense of personal integrity because their behaviour is, as I say, impeccable. We come on to meditation. Oh my goodness. High investment, low vulnerability in meditation. What is it? What does it look like? High investment in meditation is an emotional investment, an overbearing investment in the results of meditation. So the meditator is always comparing. They're goal-orientated. They want progress. They want to experience success in the meditation. And that leads to all kinds of problems. So it's they remain low in vulnerability. So the student creates an idea in their heads of what they think meditation should be. Meditation should be peaceful. It should be tranquil. There should be great insights. There mustn't be any evidence of anything rude or painful, or you get the general idea, or evil or wrong. And as a consequence, they got low vulnerability because they can only accept certain aspects of themselves and they reject other aspects of themselves. So they're not being integral to themselves. They're not being honest. And so this creates a schism in the mind. It creates a conflict where the person never settles. They're always concerned. There is always this great self-concern that comes along with the meditation. And it's very, very painful. It leads to all kinds of elation and depression. The slightest glimmer of a moment's peace is grabbed onto high emotional investment, yeah? Success, look. And the moment you grab for it, of course, it's gone. Depression. Instantly one becomes depressed because it hasn't turned out as you wanted it to be. So there's a huge emphasis on success and failure in meditation. So, just like the boy looking for a girlfriend, you've got to increase your rate of failure to figure out what's going on. You have to learn to accept that what you thought of as failure is a positive thing. Consider somebody who's high in vulnerability and low in this emotional investment. They're low in high in vulnerability. It means that you have confidence and integrity in who you are, warts and all. And that vulnerability and openness means that you can look at absolutely anything that occurs in meditation. It doesn't bother you because everything is equally important. I was talking to somebody today and we were talking about a particular thought form that arises which says, I'm failing, this isn't good enough. And we both agreed that that was no more important than the chirping of a bird outside. They're just mental objects arising in a meditation. But we take the thought so seriously. But it's just a thought. Anything that arises in the meditation, anything at all, if you're willing to look at it, if you're willing to observe its true nature, you see that it doesn't last. There isn't a need to reject it. This whole idea of success and failure in meditation is a nonsense. There's no such thing as failure. You can't fail in meditation. The only way you can fail in meditation is to stop meditating. Because meditation is just simply a mirror. It's just literally the ability for us to look at what is actually going on in mind and body. It's not judging it. Again, throw away your clipboards. There are no marks being handed out. There are no certificates going to be awarded at the end of this. You're just... The whole idea of meditation is that it is an enjoyable exploration and discovery of our subjective experience and how it actually works. In what way is that? Is there a kind of time limit on that? Is there a sort of, oh, when will I be finished? That's all your high investment, low vulnerability. somebody who's got high vulnerability and low investment just rests in the meditation, watching things arise and pass away. If you persist with the meditation, if you learn all the lessons that you have to learn about giving up your self-concern, letting go, being willing just to be and observing and investigating kinds of materiality and mentality that arises, you gradually reach what we might call, what I've heard says, is an unentangled seeing. It's like you reach a point where your confidence is, you have this natural confidence in what's going on. You've developed all the various spiritual faculties and the factors of enlightenment, and over time it gives you this capacity to just rest, watching what's going on without any thought of success or failure whatsoever. It is a real unentangled seeing, and you're able to see the arising and passing away of mental and physical events, just arising and passing away due to conditions, and it is possible to see then that there is nobody doing it. There is no requirement for any self or any doer of these things or any witness of these things. Life is inherently complete. It's always been complete. And the whole problem of self-view arises whenever we resist and say, oh, it shouldn't be like this, it can't be like this. And the meditator goes through this extraordinary journey of finding out that each time they resist, say, life should be different than it is, that's the arising of self-view. And that they also notice that there are periods when there is this just unself-conscious, spontaneous being, where there is just this experiencing life as it is, without any of that resistance. So they come to see that there really isn't a self. There's only the idea of self that arises when we're resisting, when we're saying life should be different, either inwardly or outwardly. We must always remember that the whole purpose of this training is to come to recognize that resistance is the cause of suffering. Resistance to being rejected. Resistance to finding things in your own mind and body that you don't like. And it is the resistance that's the problem, not the things that you find. And the more you let go of that resistance, the more you let go of that self-concern, the more you let go of that self-concern, the more you realize the natural confidence that is always waiting there underneath. That natural confidence, which is just this unself-conscious, spontaneous being.